From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. A production of iHeartRadio.
Hello, welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
My name's Noel.
They call me Ben. We're joined, as always, with our super producer, Paul Mission Control Deccant. Most importantly, you are you, you are here, and that makes this Stuff They Don't Want You to Know. This episode has been a long time in the making, folks. It's been a long road to get here. I think all of us, Matt, Noel, Mission Control, myself, have been a big fan of Jake Hanrahan's work in conflict journalism, where he often risked life and limb to shed light on stories and conflicts that are rarely reported at all in the Western world, much less reported objectively. That's been the case for a long time. Additionally, Jake is a filmmaker. You've seen him on Vice. You've seen him on HBO, ProPublica, Bellingcat, BBC News. The list goes on. One personal favorite is Popular Front, a grassroots investigative organization Jake founded back in 2018. And If you read the headline of this episode and you're trying to figure out what the hell is going on with QAnon, well, Jake is your man. We have, no hyperbole, 1,000 questions for you, Jake. I don't think we're going to get to them all, but first things first, thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Oh, mate, like I said earlier, like, this has been my favorite podcast since I was about 22. So yeah, man, I'm really happy to be on it, man. Thank you so much.
Oh my gosh. Well, the feeling is mutual, sir. Your new QAnon pod is mind-blowingly excellent.
And thanks,
it's such
thanks.
A tangled web to unravel, and you do a fine job. And that's only 3 episodes in, and I just can't wait for what's to come.
Yeah, I don't know what is to come yet. It's taken a long time to write it, but yeah.
Let's start with a question about location. So your career as a war reporter has taken you across the world to a lot of places that wouldn't be considered, you know, top 10 tourist destinations, to say the least.
And
you've worked in Syria and Palestine, from Peru to Iraq to Ukraine, as well as Turkey, which we must explore in depth in today's show. The first question I think a lot of people are going to have listening today is, what inspired you to take this career path, and what was your first actual conflict reporting experience like?
It's a good question. I mean, I'm not good at that many things, and I didn't do well at school. Like, school was definitely not a thing I was good at. And I just, like, you know, left when I was like 16, didn't do college or anything. But the only thing I was always like keen on was reading, right? So I was always reading. I remember my granddad was just saying to me, like, look, if you just read, you can teach yourself so much, which is true, right? So I just always been a good, like, big reader. And then I just thought, right, you know, I can write. So I started off as kind of like, you know, experimenting with print journalism, and, you know, I'll do these articles and that. And I just thought, yeah, why not? Like, I can try this. But at the time, I was a bit like, oh, you know, someone like me can't do this. You know, kind of, I didn't really have a good perception of what journalism was, other than like the guy on the news with a tie, right? But then as I read more and like read these books specifically by journalists that were, you know, embedded with militant groups and whatever, I was like, yeah, I want to do that. I've always been drawn to kind of like the dark things, if you know what I mean, whether that's like crime or what, conflict or whatever. So for me, I remember like reading articles and reading books by like other journalists, and just like blew my hair back. You know what I mean? I was like, this is amazing. Like, this is real. And these guys actually went there. So like, long story short, I was just, you know, pushing away. And I guess when I started at Vice, I was kind of already reporting on conflict stuff. And eventually I ended up in, man, what, like, I was like 24. I think the first front line I went to was Iraq, when like ISIS were still in Mosul. So that was cool. And honestly, like, it was like pretty chill. Like, you know, there wasn't much going on at the time. It wasn't what you think. Like, I was just like hanging out with the like soldiers and that. But then, like, I think the big, like, first big one was like Southeast Turkey, you know, like we mentioned a little bit. Like, that was like an urban combat, you know, situation where the front line is the street, you know, where the corner shop and where people live. So I guess, like, I just got a real hunger for it, and I felt like I understood it on some level, you know. Like, I feel like I'm perhaps good at you know, talking to people. You know, I mean, I don't know what round is. I don't know what gun this is. I don't know what munitions that is. That to me is not that interesting. For me, it's like, how do these people end up just being normal people? And then something happens in their lives and they kind of have to take up arms. You know, that to me has always been really interesting. So, yeah, man, I just think, for me, the fun parts of the war, I don't want to say fun as if like, oh, yeah, it's a game. But you know what I mean? The bits that I enjoy with my job is kind of just meeting people you would never normally meet and seeing them kind of in these situations and trying to tell their story, you know, like, why are they there? How did this happen? And when they trust you and say, yeah, like, you know, this, and this, I think, yeah, it's cool, man. It's good fun.
I think it's interesting too, like how quickly our brains kind of normalize things that are completely insane. And when you're in a situation like that, where it's literally on your street, in your neighborhood, and yeah, it's terrifying, but people live. And like, that's to me an interesting part of what it must be like for you to just be around people as they're living through these things, but also not like living in abject terror 24/7. I could imagine. Maybe I'm overthinking it, but.
No, you're right. It's like that is for me as well, like one of the most fascinating things. Like I remember a kind of a scene in Southeast Turkey with the Kurdish like youth militants, and they're all teenagers. And we kind of stopped after there was like a bit of a firefight, like Turkish military were firing into the village from up on some mountains. And then after it kind of died down, we just sat there like on a, you know, on the ground, and these kids were like eating, like pouring out Coke, like here, you know, like drinks, like, do you want this? And then this one kid was just playing on his phone with an AK slung over his shoulder. And I remember just thinking like, wow, like this is just surreal. You know what I mean? So that to me has always been fascinating, to kind of, you know, people get a really dumb idea. They think people live constantly in war, and it's like, nah, man, they're just like you and me. They just want to live. And unfortunately, you know, it's on their doorstep a lot of the time.
You've been to all these places where there's been real danger to the people living there every day of, you know, of their lives. They, like you say, they get into this, what is hopefully a temporary situation where something must be dealt with and there is conflict that is violent. So there's a real danger to those human beings that are there. To put yourself in that situation, whether for a job or by your own volition, to put yourself there and to go and talk to somebody that may be in opposition to a government or in opposition to some other armed force, that feels like a very scary thing and a very dangerous thing to do. But also, as you know, if you've listened to this show, you know that we think that's a very important thing to do. And I wonder, I know the answer to this question. I don't mean to pose it as though I don't, but what is the most harrowing situation you have found yourself in because of your job and what you do?
Probably like my grandma going mad at me when she found out I was in Syria, like, do you know what I mean? But then
your grand was real upset.
Yeah, yeah.
How'd she find out?
Well, I just got back and was like, no, I wasn't in Iraq, I was in Syria, like, so I was, but going to jail in Turkey, man, definitely was like the biggest issue. Like that was just like, oh dear. I was just thinking like, I knew my luck would run out, you know, like I knew it was going to run out, and then it really did. And I was like, oh Christ. But at the same time, it taught me some like really valuable lessons about freedom, and also taught me how the people, like the ultimate like threat to these people that I was filming with. Right. You know, like I remember after I got out, I speak to some, you know, Kurdish people and they were like, now you know how we feel, you know? And I was like, yeah, actually. And so in a way, it was a good experience just in terms of like life experience, and it kind of shaped my worldview a little bit more. But certainly at the time, I didn't think that at all. I was like, what have you done, you know? So it wasn't good, no.
So this is for folks who are unaware, we're talking about a situation that occurred in 2015 when Jake, you and your colleagues, Philip Pendlebury and Mohammed Rasul, an Iraqi Kurdish journalist, were detained by the government. But oddly enough, if I understand this correctly, you were detained when you returned, right? Because you had gone to Turkey previously.
That's right. Yeah, that is right. We'd been there twice before filming, but you gotta understand, like, before when we were filming, the government wasn't as restrictive as it is now, right? I mean, that's not biased. That's a pure fact. It's like the second jailer of journalists worldwide. You can go to prison for saying something bad about the government on Twitter. You know, it's crazy. So when we were first there, it actually wasn't like that. You know, there was a ceasefire between the Kurdish militants and the government. And it was dicey, but it wasn't as bad, right? And then when we were there the third time, that's when the ceasefire was very over. You know, it was open warfare in the streets in the southeast. And we were kind of the first to get swept up like that, you know. Like, a lot of journalists after that started getting arrested, deported. Hundreds of, like, local Kurdish reporters just completely gone, you know, all in prison, MPs, everything. But we were kind of at the start of that, you know. So whilst it might be like, well, yeah, of course you were going to get arrested, it's like, actually, if you look at the, you know, the context of what was going on at the time, no. Like, they could have easily just deported us at the airport because we'd already made a film with these Kurdish militants one time before. So they could have just been like, nah, get out of here. It wasn't that at the time, right? It was kind of the start of the, I mean, like, you know, the brutal authoritarianism wasn't quite there. And as it started, we were kind of lucky because there are people that have done, like, 2 years, you know. They just kind of let us out after like 2 weeks, after being in several different prisons. There was a lot of like international pressure, and, you know, I think they were like, oof, you know, like, just get them out of here sort of thing. I could certainly tell in the jail, like, one time the guard was like, you know, they were like, not that nice. And then after it was on TV, they were like much nicer all of a sudden. They were like, we treat you well, right? And I was like, what? Like, so that did kind of help, actually, you know, it really did.
At the time, you're working for Vice News, correct?
That's right, yeah.
So how much help did you get from that organization, or how much perceived help did you get from that organization when you were in that situation?
To be honest, Vice at the time were like excellent. They helped us so much, you know, and there's a lot of issues within journalism, specifically around conflict, like Al Jazeera were in hot water, the way they allegedly treated some of their reporters when they went to prison, not supporting them enough. But there's a few cases actually with different news organizations, but honestly, like, I can't fault Vice News enough. Like, you know, I don't really get on with them now, but what they did for us then, it was a different Vice News then, but what they did for us then, like, they did everything and more, you know what I mean? Like, and to this day, they're still like looking after certain things because the case is still ongoing, believe it or not, like 5 years later.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, man, it's...
This brings us to, I think, a macro trend. So according to the Committee to Protect Journalists, they issued a report back in early December 2019 where they said, the way they phrased it was, over 2019, at least 250 journalists across the planet have been imprisoned somewhere for their reporting. And they also said this is the fourth straight year that number has been that high. So it goes, of course, without saying, for a lot of our U.S. listeners, arrests are on the rise in the U.S. as well. Jake, do you see this trend increasing in the future? And if so, why?
I do. And I don't know why specifically, but my like own theory is that we're kind of this whole post-truth world idea, like, it is kind of real. You know, like, I am really seeing it where things that used to matter don't really matter anymore, right? Like, to be honest, I've looked at I did a lot of research on this when I got out of prison because I wanted to think, like, how can I help other journalists that end up in prison in the future, right? And if you look at, like, the 90s and whatever, if a journalist went to prison, it was a big deal, like, in whichever country they're from, right? Like, and people were like, wow, they were outraged. Honestly, now, like, people are just kind of like, eh, you know, oh, that's bad tweet, you know, and done. And it's things don't have the same cultural impact anymore. And I think social media is a lot to do with it. I think technology is a lot to do with it. And I think the whole like post-truth thing is a problem. You know, the rise of kind of right-wing populism where things can just be shrugged off, like, oh, who cares about that? And then everyone goes, like, yeah, who cares? You know, things that, you know, like if Watergate happened now, I think, I don't know if people would be that bothered, you know, like I really am not sure. And I just think the whole, what's the word, like the Overton window has changed. So it's been like smashed and kicked out, you know, and I just think things have changed so much that honestly, like people just, people don't really care that much. So then authoritarian governments realize they can get away with more, right? And they do.
Well, I mean, the term post-truth in and of itself is surreal and sounds like something from Orwell. Like, yeah. I mean, it really sounds like a joke, like it's satire, but that's what it is. Or it's like postmodern, but we know what modernism is. Truth is an objective thing, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's true or it's not true. But we're living in this time that's called post-truth, or at least that's a term that's being thrown around, and I think it's totally on point. QAnon, utterly a product of this concept.
Yeah. I think they're post-post-truth. You know what I mean?
Well, let's get to there. I mean, let's talk a little bit about the podcast, you know? I mean,
Clearance
is the name, and you, like we said at the top of the show, there's this insane web that is QAnon that, honestly, we do this show, you know, weekly, and when we first ran across it, I was like, I don't know what the hell this is. I don't understand what this is. And I need you. I think we all do.
It's a headache for me as well. But like, I mean, I wanted a little break from constantly doing conflict, you know, like with my project Popular Front, it's all conflict reporting. And I was like, man, I need just like a little break from this. But for me, I can't really have a break. I've got to be working. I like being busy. So I was like, I know, like I'll do another project. And, you know, like I said, I've been listening to this podcast for years. I love conspiracy theories, you know, like when I was a teenager, like, I used to believe in the most craziest stuff, you know, and then I grew up and was like, what is wrong with me? but now as an adult, I just still love researching them, looking into them, finding out why they happen. And there's always that 1% of me that's like, maybe, you know what I mean? It keeps me interested in them. So when I how people will watch, like you guys say, like trash TV, right? Like reality TV, people watch that to unwind. Me, I watch conspiracy documentaries, like outrageous ones, you know what I mean? So I came across QAnon just naturally, you know, like watching Bigfoot, watching whatever. And then there was QAnon. And I was like, this is like the mother of the conspiracy theories, right? It's like the whole umbrella of every conspiracy theory I'd been reading since I was a teenager, and everything's under it. And when I saw it was taking off, I just was like, surely not. Like, come on. Like, so that's, I got to the point where I see the election coming up and I was like, man, I want to do something like about this. And there's some great podcasts already out there, you know, QAnon Anonymous and you know, there's other ones out there. And so I was like, well, what can the angle be? So I guess my angle was like, let me bring all these great researchers together in my research and we can kind of go, you know, by the end of it, we want to be able to say, look, this is who we think Q is, not just because of this hunch, not just because this guy says so. We want to be like A add to A, B add to B. You know what I mean? This matches up, that matches up. And at the same time, kind of tell the true and on story and unwrap it all for everybody. You know, this is not a podcast for people that already know about Q. I want it to be accessible for everyone, right? And it's hard. It's very hard to write. And like this incredible web of like information that is just so unbelievably far-fetched. But to then kind of be like, well, this is maybe why they believe it. And this is where it comes from. And ultimately, you know, I'm not actually trying to laugh at these QAnons, even though I am kind of laughing. Like, ultimately, it's quite sad. You know, like there have been families torn apart from this. And it's sad that so many people can believe in things so outrageous. While saying, you know, fake news at the news, you know, and I think that's a failure of not just the establishment. I think that's a failure of a lot of things, media, education. It's like the ultimate endpoint of all the conspiracy theories in the last 20 years, I think. That's a long way of explaining it, but you catch my drift.
No, this is perfect, because one thing that strikes me about Q Clearance is that you've taken on a Herculean task of unraveling, you know, the almost like the folkloric etymology of how this came to be, the future of where it might go, how it evolves. There's an excellent interview where you talk a bit about QAnon as a meta conspiracy, and there's so many conspiracies that reach that meta point. It's just usually they take several decades or centuries to get there.
Exactly. And this one just went whoo, like 3 years.
Yeah.
With that.
Yes.
Well, you guys, I remember, and you probably do too. I know you do, Ben, looking at Above Top Secret and other forums like that and reading, you know, an anonymous post with somebody saying they've got all this secret information.
Skunkworks. That was the
Skunkworks.
Yeah, I used to love that forum. Yeah.
Well, but like, so I mean, we would look at that stuff and do our level best to attempt to prove something or to find some kind of evidence somewhere of stuff that's being said there. And it was, for me personally, a very exciting hour to 2 hours, maybe a couple days of like going down rabbit holes. And I'm wondering how much this phenomenon, this idea that there is a secret person named Q, is playing into those same things, those same chemicals that were being released in my brain when that was my pursuit.
No, definitely. I think you're right. That's the crux of it, actually. That's how it kind of spread, I think, because it's fun, right? It's exciting because Q says to them, you do your own investigations. You are the news now. So you get all these like wine mums and whatever, like no offense to wine mums, but what I mean is they don't have anything else to do a lot of the time, right? The kids are wherever. And so they're just like all day on the computer. They've got time to research it and they just feel they have like, there's an accomplishment, right? And then you can share it with other people and go, hey, look what I found. And then they go, oh, wow. Then a community starts to form. And then you can reaffirm each other's value based on the research you've done. That person is useful to my group. That person is useful. And then they're all in this big thing where they think they're being led by intel from the White House. They feel like the foot soldiers of a revolution from their desk. And that's what's very addictive, I think, for them, you know? And it kind of doesn't matter when it pans out, it's like, oh, that didn't happen, even though Q said it was going to happen literally at this time and date. In fact, as we record this right now, this is 3 years to the day of the first ever Q drop on 4chan when yes. Q said he was going to arrest Hillary Clinton or whatever. Didn't happen. But it almost doesn't matter when the predictions don't come through because they're having so much fun. They're so wrapped up in it that it's like, we'll just find a reason why that didn't matter. I mean, you know, ironically, it's who is QAnon, the friends we made along the way, right? But unfortunately, it's not that chill at all. It's 0% chill, you know? So unfortunately, it could become dangerous.
I just want to follow up with that statement about Herculean tasks. So one thing that is cult-like, frankly, about this is a bit of the choose-your-own-adventure vibe, if you remember those old paperbacks.
Absolutely,
Have you run in, when you're exploring this story, and I don't want to spoil things for the show, but have you seen much of what I would describe as individual customization? Like, have you seen someone be the voice of reason in one of these Q forums and say, look, this part of it's true, this part of it is not? Does that happen? Or is it all more or less lockstep?
No, it does happen, man, actually. It's like, that's a good question because I was reading something just the other day where, like, a guy that was an ardent Q, I started looking at his posting, like, progress. And he was just getting like, hang on, what? When is it going to happen? When is, you know, they call it the plan. No one really knows what the plan is, but don't worry about that. So they're kind of like, when is it going to happen? And this guy was just like, this is nuts. Like he literally like got himself out of it. He was like, none of these predictions have happened, you know, like, and he kind of left. And then other people are like more. So there's a guy that I watch, right? And he seems like such a nice guy. But he's deep in QAnon, very believing in conspiracy. And he's like more moderate. Like he's not an anti-Semite. He's not a racist, you know, and he's not really deep in the more wacky side of Q. So he was what you might be able to call like a more moderate Q. And then you have like the far, far extreme version of Q where it's all satanic and babies are being eaten and all of that. So there are levels to it. But I say that even he's like, oh, this guy seems lovely. And then he's like, well, when we get our way, we'll hang all the Democrats for treason. And you're like, oh, like he's not that nice, you know. So even the like well kind of to-do ones are like have this very dark concept of violence at the end of this, you know. And I think that's something that interested me where kind of from what I'm doing with conflict, actually, you know, like I've spent like, 7 years reporting from conflict. And I, you know, I engage in Twitter a lot and I'm a very, like, very online guy. Like, I always have been. I've, you know, like, something awful, like, big time into, like, 4chan when it was cool when, like, you know, Anonymous were on there as a kid and whatever. So I've always been very online. And then I see these guys that treat war like a football match. I'm on this side. Jake, who's the, you know, who's the win? Who's the good guy? And then there'll be some horrific video where the side that they like, you know, one, and then they're like, yeah, great. And it's like, well, what you're cheering on is like mass death and horrific violence, right? The reality of that, when you see it, you know, I've seen some I don't want to be like, I've seen stuff, man. But you know what I mean? Like, I've seen a few gnarly situations, and it's not, you don't go, yeah. You just go like, isn't this sad? Like, isn't this horrific that this is happening? And I think the QAnons have a similar vibe where they're saying like, yeah, we'll hang everybody for treason and all of this stuff. And it's like, do you know what that will look like? Like, you, are you going to do that? Like, you're the foot soldiers of Q. What, are you going to hang people en masse, you know, like just because they voted for a different way? So that's when you start getting into the darker side of it. So I guess my point is like, yeah, there are different levels to it, like you said. And some people are like, oh, don't be silly. That's too extreme. But ultimately, they all have the belief in the plan, and the plan is pretty nasty.
And we'll be back with more from Jake Hanrahan after a word from our sponsor. And we're back. This reminds me of something we noticed in your conflict reporting career. In Ukraine, you were embedded with both the Ukraine army and then also with a separatist group. And so those folks who, so I can see where you would say, well, these are both, this is tragedy happening, you know, regardless of affiliation. And that's something a lot of people miss. And in interest of, I know we're asking some harrowing questions, so we thought we thought you might enjoy a little bit of a softball that you might have fun with, because part of this show is we have to objectively look at everything, right? So, Jake, where would you say some of the claims from QAnon to begin to, you know, fall apart? Just a little.
Well, I mean, the very first post was Hillary Clinton is going to be arrested in like 2 days. And then she didn't. So, you know, that was a big one. But the point I always make to a lot of people, and I'm going to get a bit dark here, but I have to because it's necessary. The point I say to a lot of people is like, so QAnon is big on Save the Kids, right? And where QAnon is actually right in some ways is there are elite pedophile rings. We've seen it with Epstein and the horrific way that, you know, the poor young girls are treated, the victims, and it's disgusting. And, you know, Trump was involved, Clinton was involved, a lot of very important, powerful people were involved. It's bipartisan, right? So, yeah, that's very horrific. But then they jump the shark in 1 second, right? And it's like it goes from this is serious to like, Hillary Clinton is eating babies. It's like, oh my God, come on. But so they're very invested in like Save the Kids. We hate pedophiles. There's an elite pedophile ring. So why then does Q use 8chan, which for years openly shared pedophilia? Like openly. There were pedophiles on that board, like not even coded really. Like trying to work out how to share pedophilia together. That was the most disgusting thing about 8chan. Why on earth would Q go there to dump this information, right? Like, they can't give you an answer for that. It's, oh, well, they were forced into these. If Q's an intelligence asset, make your own website, right? Like, surely he has a way of doing it. He's got Q clearance. I'm sure he knows a few IT guys, for Christ's sake. So that is, like, for me, just the basic things like that are, like, come on. Like, why would they do that? Because if you say failed predictions, they say, ah, it was a red herring. You know, anything that doesn't happen was a part of the plan. So you can't combat that. But like, you know, I've actually had some discussions with a few Q curious people down at my boxing gym. And I've explained, like, I use that example. Why would I use a place where pedophilia is accepted to rail against elite pedophile rings? It doesn't make any sense. And people kind of go like, oh, yeah, you know, so I think that's a way to kind of break it down. But again, there are like I said, there are like facets of truth, and they've really, whoever it is, has done a good job of jumping on that, because everyone I know is, anyway, like even like friends that are not involved in journalism, whatever, they know about Epstein, they've got kids, they've got sisters, you know, they're disgusted by it, and rightly so. And when they read about it and they're like, wow, Bill Clinton was on his plane how many times, or like, you know, Trump said what about Epstein, it's gross, right? So then if Q comes along and says, oh, but here's the secret side of it. Firstly, it's a bit spicier, right? Like the lies were always a bit spicier. And secondly, there's a whole community that are going to fill you in and inform you before you know it. You know, a friend said to me the other day, he said, you know, I've lost a few friends to QAnon. And it's like, yeah, like that happens. Like you will just lose people to it, man. And it's like a drug. It's like they're on a drug, but they're not. It's I don't know, man. It's it's very worrying that I never thought, you know, like I said, years of reading Above Top Secret and like listen to you guys and all of that, like years of that, I never thought this would happen, I'll be honest. Like, it was always a fringe thing that was fun. Now it's like, I still laugh at it, but now and then I catch myself and be like, I shouldn't really laugh at that. Like, this is actually serious, you know?
You've touched on a lot of really important things there, Jake, and it feels to me inevitable. It feels like this was going to happen because as we have better access to the internet, just as humanity, as these real truths, like you're talking about with the Epsteins and the pedophiles that have been uncovered in very high places in government and media, and you realize that it's happening more and more and you feel completely helpless to do anything about it. You know, like every person walking around knows that there are children being abused right now and you feel like there's nothing you can do about it. But when Q comes along as even a possibility, as even a glimmer of possibility out in the world that, that something could be done and perhaps I can do something about it by researching this, I think it is something very desirable that a lot of us may feel inside.
That's a great point. Yeah, it's like, you're right. It's like they can be useful to stop this. Like, yeah, and it's, I hate to keep bringing it up, but so much of the QAnon mythos, if you like, does revolve around elite pedophile rings. And it's like, yeah, it's, that is the worst thing I could ever think of. Like, and it's real. So then you're right. Like, people wanted, what can I do? What can I do? You know, in lieu of setting up some kind of militia and running around doing whatever they would, you know, big man talk that they often do, they can now do Q, right? Like, oh, like, you know, they say like we're the digital army, like they don't say serving, but they kind of, you know, they imply that we're serving like the Q agenda. We're the news now. What do they say? There's like all these sayings they have. And yeah, basically all of them boil down to like what you've just said. It's like, we're doing something, right? And it's, and ironically, a lot of what they're doing is serious pain for families and serious like upheavals of people's lives, you know, especially when they completely arbitrarily accuse someone of something horrific, you know, and it's like they haven't done anything. And just because of some insane tiny coincidence, then they decide that person is in on it, right? And it's like, man, you know, it's not a popular thing to say, but I think a lot of them, their heart is in the right place. You know what I mean? And the brain isn't. It's just the brain isn't. And that's why it's sad. You know, it's like, again, like there's a lot of, you know, and a lot of, I guess, Q researchers that have been doing this longer than I have, especially in America. I know they kind of don't really like that I'm kind of like, no, like, let's talk to them. Let's see what they've got to say. And I respect that. That's how they do it. But for me, there's a part of me just feel like, you know, a little bit of empathy towards it. It's, yeah, it's sad, right? Like, it's sad. Like, if, I know, like, people who they're like, their mom and dad don't speak to them anymore because they're like, nah, you're a part of the cabal. And it's like, what? This began on 4chan.
And then also, you know, what's interesting, I think a point we should emphasize is that earlier we said, you know, one of the first things you said about Q falling apart is that the first prediction was demonstrably incorrect. Yeah. But Q does something that is very common to organizations of this type, which is pass the burden of validity onto the consumer or the audience member or the foot soldiers of Q. So it's kind of like when people think an apocalyptic cult got their end of the world prediction right, we just misinterpreted it. Like, how do you see that community handle those corrections? Do they say, well, we just misinterpreted what Q said? I know the red herring theory is popular. Like, did Q knew someone was infiltrating this freely accessible message board and threw these red herrings out? Like, how do people deal with that when these predictions don't in fact come true?
Well, brace yourself. One that I have seen is Hillary was arrested when they said, and now the Hillary we see now is like a body double or a clone or something like that. So there's one for you. Like, that's just to, you know, immediately jump the shark at 100 miles an hour. That's one kind of way to do it. And then others are, it's part of the plan. Haha, fools, you fell for it. What, you took that seriously? He didn't mean it. It was a metaphor. You know what I mean? Like, ways to snake around it. almost as if like you're the idiot. And it's like, hang on, you're just following this guy that made a false prediction, like a huge prediction. But it's almost like, nah, you're the idiot. You don't see the message, right? And that is kind of powerful, I guess, because surely there's a lot of people having doubt. But then when someone comes along and says, don't have doubt, we were right. It was them who were wrong. It's going to happen. It just, that was, Q had to say it that way to get us all flared up. Now we're on board. And without that, right? Like, he had to make the spark to set the fire. And it's crazy, man. But again, it is this post-truth thing of like, it just doesn't matter, you know? And then they also do the thing of, I mean, there are some weird coincidences, as there would be, like, there's so hundreds and hundreds of Q posts. So every now, like, one in a thousand or whatever, however many it is, there will be, like, you know, Q will say something, and then Trump might say something kind of similar. And then it's like, well, that's an affirmation for them, right? So then it's like, well, the false prediction doesn't matter anymore because the affirmation is stronger. So dwell on that. Like, they don't bring up the false thing, right? They don't go, oh, well, forget about that. It's just, it's gone. And here's the affirmation. Well, that's good. I mean, when Trump in the last month is twice as the president of the most powerful country on earth, not condemned a conspiracy theory that started on 4chan and thrived on a message board that allowed pedophilia, you know, for them, that's a very, very big thing, as it should be for anybody like that. It, no matter what political side you're on, I think any straightforward thinking person should go, wow, that's very worrying that he didn't say, of course, this is nonsense, right? So for QAnons, that was like Christmas.
But like, so there's a section, or actually it's the whole episode, the second episode of your podcast, where you explore the notion that QAnon is like a left-wing prank. And I don't want to spoil anything about it, because there's a whole thing you go into, which was, I'd never heard of, like this potential almost like theatrical kind of like performance art group that does this kind of stuff. Really interesting. Don't want to even go into there. Got to listen to the episode to find out. But when you really start digging into it, and just the random absurdity of all of this stuff, and then, you know, bringing in Satanism, which anyone that actually has done any research into Satanism knows that satanic panics are always hoaxes, and there's always some kind of misunderstanding at the heart of it. And true Satanism is really almost more of a punk rock kind of like middle finger to the establishment. You're not actually like drinking goat's blood and like drawing pentagrams and like abandoned churches or anything like that. But like, so when you start digging into it, it really does feel like it could be that thing. And yet it's been mainstreamed so acutely. And if it was meant to be this like left wing prank to make right wingers look stupid, and it reads that way, how is it caught on in such a insane way? Like, I can't wrap my head around it. Is it the post-truth thing? Is it like boredom? Is, I don't know. Like, I
ask myself this all the time. Like, honestly, like the other day I was reading about like, are we in a simulation? I don't believe that at all, but it's just a fascinating concept I was reading. And I was thinking like, QAnon could be like, all these years I spent on like conspiracy forums and stuff, like, has someone made a program to just mug me off? Like, do you know what I mean? Like, is it a simulation, and am I like recreating my own monster? Like, because it's that crazy, right? You're just like, surely not, surely not. But to answer your question, I think, yeah, you know what it is? It's like, it's boredom. It's like, I think culturally we're in a very strange place. I feel like we're in between, you know, like the early 2000s is gone. The 2010s is here. We're really at the peak. Well, I guess we're always at the peak because of progress. But, you know, we've really hit our stride within, like, senseless, constant scrolling. You know, like, I'm 30, man, and I'm so, so glad I didn't grow up with that. You know, we had a phone and we check it for, like, are you here yet? Yes, no. That was it, you know? Like, there wasn't this constant. Like, for me, technology was perfect when it was PS1s and Nokia 3310s. You know, it went too far for me after that. But I think it's that the lack of connectivity in human, you know, face-to-face, and then COVID, man, that was a real problem. That really put a lot of people into their bedrooms. That, for me, is when there's a real weird thing that I don't think anyone has tackled yet, not with any kind of sensitivity anyway, where I see it, where I'm from, like, working class communities are getting hyper conspiratorial, and I've seen it there more than anywhere else, right? And that comes from, we already distrust our government because, I mean, trust me, where I live, local government doesn't care about us. They do not care. Like, you know, we have like volunteers have to set up food banks because there's just not enough, right? And so already you grow up knowing the police often will hate me and stop and search me for nothing. The government clearly don't hate me. And then you're in a place where there's bad education as well because you grew up poor. You didn't go to a nice school. That you already set up to distrust all authority, which, you know, it's, I think it's fine. I kind of do myself. But unfortunately, these people, you know, and these people are smart, man. Just because you're from a bad background or like poor background doesn't mean you're not smart. But instead of getting the knowledge and processing it correctly, it just kind of sits there and stews. So it's like, well, I've read, I'm well read now. It's true. And it's like, nah, man, there's a, I don't know what it is. I'm not smart enough to know, but there's a disconnect where being well read and reading a lot of research, you can't just say, okay, that's real, you know, because that would be like saying, I know about space because I watched all the Star Wars. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah, the processing of the information for some reason is going in a weird direction. And I'm seeing a lot of it, man. And I'm seeing like friends from the way around the way and just being like, you know, and they'll ask me, you know, hey, Jake, you must have seen this. I'm like, yeah, man, I did, but it's nonsense. And they're like, ah, oh, come on, man. Are you a part of, you part of them? I see you work for the media. What about? And it's like, oh my God. Like, so my friends, you know, I mean, most of my friends are smart enough to not go for it, but some of my friends will be like, I notice, I'm like, okay, you're believing Facebook posts and 8chan posts above your friend who you've known your whole life. In a matter of a year, that's happened, you know, and it's, man. I mean, it's happening in all communities, but specifically I'm seeing it with this thing.
It reminds me, you know, one point I wish people talked about more is that that the first conspiracy theory many people learn about in the West, they learn about when they're very young. It's Santa Claus. A group of powerful people, adults, collude successfully, right? And then when you learn about it, you have to be in on it. I assure you this, the conversations that you just told us about happens to us, as you might imagine, pretty frequently.
Oh, I bet,
I think what we're talking about here is, you know, you can't read a correspondence course on swimming and then just go across the English Channel, right? That's part of the reason that we have to value primary sources. We have to value cross-checking and we have to value the credibility of something. But the disconnect perhaps comes from seeking agency, right? Because do you think people find conspiracy theories comforting because the alternative would be rampant incompetence and chaos?
I don't, well, on some level, but I can answer this from a personal point of view. You know, like I said, I love watching conspiracy stuff. And I think it comes from because the alternative is very boring, actually. Like, how unbelievably boring is it to be like, oh, yeah, like, all the politicians are just horrific scumbags who come in to get their money and power and leave. It's like, oh, well, that's obviously what's happening, in my opinion anyway. But it's like, that's a bit more boring than, you know, 9/11 was an inside job. It's a little bit more boring than all of that. So, yeah, maybe it's just, and again, like, even me, man, I watched, The New Pearl Harbor, like some 6-hour documentary. It's like The New Loose Change, right? About 9/11. I was like, oh, this is going to be a treat. Let me get into this tonight. And like, properly, I was like laughing out loud at some of it. But then some of it, I was like, And then when it finished, I was like, come on, man, what is wrong with you? But there's that 1% of like, even in me, like, I feel like I'm quite a logical guy. Like, even in me, the 1% of like, that's interesting. For me, cryptids, right? Bigfoot and that. I think they might, you know? And people have been mocking me on Twitter. Like, someone said to me, like, I can't believe you're this, like, serious war journalist and you're talking about Mothman. Like, what is wrong with you? And firstly, I'm like, bore off, leave me alone. And secondly, I'm like, well, you know, I don't know. But that's fine. That's cryptids. But, like, I think my point I'm trying to get to is the curiosity. People have curiosity. Like, you just mentioned, like, Santa Claus, right? Kids love that, man. You know, any kids in my family, I tell them, yeah, it's real. Because you see them light up. Wow, it's on their sleigh. And that's fun, man. That's so exhilarating for a kid. And that's a good example you use. I never thought of it that way because it's the same way for a conspiracy theory. Like, don't worry, I've got the inside knowledge. That's so fun, right?
And yet it somehow manages to not just like wreck your whole worldview when you find out. Or maybe it does for some kids. Like, it's such a betrayal, ultimately. Like, oh, you actively lied to me on purpose, you know, for my benefit, to give me joy or whatever. But still, it's like, if you're lying, Ben, you've made this point. If you're lying about this, what else are you lying about? Is everybody lying about everything, you know?
That's exactly what I want to bring up, Noel. Because it feels to me like just since 2005, which is when Loose Change, I think that's when the first Loose Change came out. And in between that one and the last one, we started the show. And it honestly, it was because Loose Change is one of those things that really spurs your mind to think differently. Mm. Like The Matrix coming out in 1999. A lot of these, the media and things that make you want to think differently. And then as you know, individuals like you start looking into and researching something, whether it's a cryptid, whether it's, you know, a human experimentation that occurred in St. Louis in a certain time, you start to feel like the rug is being pulled out from you completely on what you used to believe. The truths, you know, from Santa Claus all the way to how your local government works, to how the government in your country works, to how the planet itself functions. I mean, you're literally... I think what the internet combined with our curiosities, combined with more and more people digging in further, has created a situation where we not only, like you said, this post-truth world, it's not just an individual posting on Facebook something that isn't real and then that spreading. It is our minds. It is our inability now to know what is true because we feel like we've been played so many times throughout our lives.
Yeah, right. But in some ways we have. Like, I'm not talking about conspiracy theories here. Like, you know, I work in the media and I've got, you know, a lot of good friends working what people call mainstream media. You know, I don't think there's anything wrong with mainstream media in terms of individual stories. But as a whole, it is a mess. Trust me, let me tell you from someone on the inside. You guys are as well, but you know what I mean? Like in the news section of it, like it's a mess, man. Like it's a very serious mess. There are things that have happened where, you know, I'm talking to commissioning editors and producers and they're saying like, oh no, it has to be like this. And I'm thinking, Jesus Christ, how unbelievably dishonest of you to want to sway it like that. That's not because they're part of a cabal. It's not the Jews. It's not the Freemasons or whatever like nonsense people want to say. It's just the way the culture is now. We're becoming a culture war and people, without realizing it sometimes, end up skewering a story because it's like, we have to have this angle. It's manufactured kind of, it's like a manufactured thought process where it's like, well, if they're doing it like this, then we have to do it like that. It's like, not really, you know, sometimes it is what it is. You don't have to bring this angle on it. That's what I remember when I was first at Vice News, it was great. There was no agenda. It was like, what's happening? This, and that's it. There was no, well, how can we link this to Trump? How can we, it was just, this is happening, you know, and I thought that was excellent. But I will say over the last couple of years, I've just seen media in general go very strange. Like, and it's not just a right-wing talking point. It really isn't to say that like the news is becoming specifically in America, no offense, but like I sometimes I'll watch Fox just to laugh and then I'll put on like, you know, the equivalent, whatever it is. And they just be like, it's kind of the same thing just from the different sides a lot of the time. You know, I do think the right-wingers are the worst. They're the biggest crybabies, ironically. You know, they're telling everybody a snowflake, but the second you deviate from what they want, they cannot handle it. But I do think they're both actually doing it. So even when you get to that and you recognize, okay, there's flaws in the media, like then it's like you just said, the kind of everyone now is not just conspiracy theorists, you know. Like even my granddad was like, God's sake, can I just watch, you know, he's a very smart guy. I remember a while ago, he's like, can I just watch something without being told, you know, with implying how you should feel about it? It's like, yeah, like, come on. I've got a new documentary coming out soon about 3D printed guns. Yeah, 3D printed guns in Western Europe. And a few people messaged me like, oh, I'm very uncomfortable with this, Jake. Like, you haven't really, like, presented it in a way that makes, you know, kind of explains how bad this is. And, you know, I'm not saying I'm pro or anti. It doesn't matter. You know, it's like, why do you care? this is the information. Here's what they're doing. You shouldn't be concerned. I'm not, you know, I'm making you feel good. I'm rubbing your belly and telling you what's right and wrong. That's not the role of journalism. You know, even someone replied on the tweet. I was like, oh, there's a lot of Nazis replying to you here. And I was like, yeah, I hate them, but it's not my problem. You know, like, this is the information. It's not for them. It's not for them. That's kind of how it should be processed. And I'm not one of these people that believes in complete objectivity, because there is right and wrong, you know. But at the same time, you shouldn't seek out your news to have your kind of, to be rocked to sleep at night. The world is cruel and the world is nasty and it's never going to change. And I think you should take solace in being aware of what's going on, rather than someone telling you why you're scared of that, you know. And I sound like a conspiracy theorist now. Yeah. But
well, you're in the right place. Conspiracy right. realist. Because but, the truth of the matter is, one great error that the U.S. news, right, I would say like the terrestrial radio, the broadcast, makes is this conviction that, erroneous conviction, that all stories can be explained within 3 to 5 minutes, which is sadly just not the truth, you know?
Almost none can, to be honest. You know what I mean? None that are that important. And that's a good point you brought it there, because that's the kind of the format, right? The internet, ironically enough, like the internet, I remember loving blogs. I used to read blogs. I had my own little blog when I first started writing. They're all gone now. Like the internet used to be, I see it like it used to be wide open, and now it's ring fenced to social media. Like barely any blogs and that really do well now. And it's like the internet should have been the place where it took all that away, right? It took all that 3 minute explainer thing away. But now that we have Twitter and now we have the social medias, it's almost like back to the 3 minute explainer, right? Like a tweet, people want to know within 2 or 3 tweets what's happening. And if not, they're just like, whatever, I'll just make up my own mind, or I'll leave it, or whatever. So unfortunately, I feel like that format is now being manufactured within the social media. I don't believe it's an attention span thing. Like that is, Netflix has proved that people will watch something for 8 hours at a time if they're interested. I just think the interaction and the social aspect of it, and the rapid fire of it, is unfortunately, I guess what I'm saying is, like you said, the kind of 3 minute explainer has been recreated, but into social media. And it's no good, man. It's no good.
All right, we're going to take a quick step away to hear a word from our sponsors, and then we'll be back with more from Jake.
And we're back for more with Jake Hanrahan.
One of the kind of repeating themes that you always hear about in like cult type situations is people becoming estranged from their families. And with this QAnon thing, seeing that a ton, you're reading about it, but I've experienced it personally. A really dear friend of mine has essentially had to disconnect from her entire family. There's already political differences, but then they start going deep, deep, deep into this Q stuff. And it's just like, who are you? We have nothing in common anymore. How do we talk to each other? How can I, you know, give you credit for being an empathetic person if you are just, you know, spouting off all this stuff? But yet cults typically have like a central leader. And with Q, all we have is this series of kind of disjointed ideas that's just, you know, crapped out on the internet. So is QAnon a cult? And if it is it maybe like a new kind of cult that we haven't seen before, like one that's a product of the internet age? Or I don't know, like it seems so culty, but it doesn't follow all the rules, but it follows some of them. Is it making new rules for what a cult
is? I think you're right there. Yeah, it has. Like you hit the nail on the head with like it's new, right? It's something else. Maybe in 10 years there'll be a new word for what it is. But right now we're kind of seeing the genesis of it, right? So, you know, for a while I didn't believe. I was like, it's not a cult, man. And get real. And then Sarah Hightower, a researcher who's helping me a lot with Q clearance, she's like, you know, the researcher with me on this, she's always been pushing from kind of day one, like, this is a cult. And she specializes in researching cults. And the more I spoke to her, the more I looked at it, and I was like, yeah, actually, it kind of is. Just because it doesn't have a compound, just because, you know, there's no Jim Jones out there in people's faces, doesn't really matter. Like you said, it's the new thing, right? People live online now, you know? People get their everything. They get their dopamine fix online. They show the whole world a fake image of themselves online to let everybody know that life is good, even if it isn't. people shop online. You know, you don't even, when was the last time you went into a shop to try a coat on me? I'm like, size large, buy it. You know what I mean? It's so crazy. And it does, it makes sense then that the Compound is now online, right? The Compound, whatever, or the Leader is online. Q is online. And perhaps the Compound is the websites that he's on, or maybe the Compound is the community they've put themselves in, because they kind of have, and it's spilled out into the real world. We've seen it, you know, there's loads of these QAnon rallies, and there was even a Florida SWAT officer who had a QAnon patch when he met Mike Pence in 2018. It's out there, you know, it's real world. There was a guy that built an armored vehicle for himself and blocked a bridge because of QAnon. He had 900 rounds and all these weapons. So, yeah, it kind of is a cult, I think, you know. It's just like you said, it's different. It's decentralized in a way because of the, you know, they don't have a place where they live or whatever. But they live online, like we all live online now. It's not specific to them. It's almost like, how do I explain it? That was a secondary thing. We're all living online already. And then here's the cult thing. It wasn't like you have to live online to be in the cult. We're already there, man, you know? And now it just kind of coalesced in QAnon for them. But I don't think that that's particularly specific to them. You know, it just is what it, I mean, you get weird. I remember I was researching a thing. I wanted to make a documentary about, there's these weird kind of fangirls of school shooters. And I wanted to do a documentary where we'd go and meet them all and be like, why do you love the school shooters? Mate, they had a thing where this girl had a pillow with the Columbine killers' faces on them, right? It's just next level madness, right? Horrific, but fascinating at the same time. And when you look at it, that is kind of a cult-like thing in a way, because it started on the internet and they formed their own community. So my point is, I think we have to relook at what is a cult and what isn't. It's not your granddad's cult, you know what I mean? It's not that anymore. You know, it isn't. Yeah. You know, I don't think that. I think that's the minority now. You know, this weird Nexium cult. I know you guys have done stuff on that. And like, that is much smaller now these days than online kind of cult-ish things. And I think it's the way forward in a bad way. I don't mean in a good way. Like, let's do more. I mean, like, this is how it's going to progress, I think, online from now.
What's interesting there is any community can acquire cult-like characteristics, right? It doesn't have to be. Really, the Compound is defined by the commonality of experience. And we know that when groups aggregate and they coalesce around a specific set of commonalities, they tend to self. Well, I don't want to sound like some counterintelligence mumbo jumbo, but they do tend to radicalize to a degree, right? If you have someone casually join a K-pop forum, and I don't mean to pick on K-pop here, but they casually join a K-pop forum because they like a song from a band and they stick with it, then 6 months later, studies show they'll double down psychologically.
And they will come after you on Twitter like angry hornets as well. Like, they are so well organized. Like, God forbid they ever become militant. Like, they will wipe everybody out. But no, you're right. Like, the Compound is not the building that, you know, like Jonestown or whatever, like let's say Waco. The Compound wasn't the house. They didn't just go, oh, let's go and live there because we like this house. The Compound was just like a part of the building, right? But why they're there in the first place is, you know, that's the cult, right? And it's like, yeah, just because that's not in a physical building, it can still exist as a concept, right?
All right, so I think as we're recording this, we're three episodes into the podcast Q Clearance, is that correct? Maybe four?
Yeah, three. You're right. Yeah.
Okay. So we've certainly got more to learn, at least from our end as listeners. I wanted to point one thing out to you. Your show is on the iHeartRadio network, as is ours. You know that Hillary Clinton has a show on the iHeartRadio network, right?
Or her body double.
I mean, I'm saying, Jake, I think maybe you actually have a chance to get Hillary on your show at some point.
Well, I probably not, because in some of the promotional artwork that my graphic designer made for me, like, we put Hillary Clinton with like lizard eyes on it. So I don't think so. But and also
she's got a great sense of humor. She'll give it a pass.
In the first episode as well, I'm like, I'm not a Hillary supporter. I'm not a Trump supporter. Like, I kind of in the first episode wanted to let everybody know this and this and this. But I would love to get Hillary on and be like, you know, are you really you? But I don't know if I could trust myself to not go ridiculous and just be like, I would probably cancel myself from iHeart forever, but you know, like, I don't know if I trust myself, but I would love to do that. It would actually be like, do you know what would be interesting? Like, jokes aside, to kind of, she must be aware of it, right? I would love to like, hey, like, how do you look? One of the, so what is it called? Fizzle Drip or something. Frizzle Drip. That's a part of the QAnon mythos where, man, this is dark, but they literally believe there's a video of Hillary Clinton cutting a kid's face off and wearing it. Like, I would love to be like, how do you feel about the fact hundreds of thousands of people across the world believe this is real? And one interesting part of this is the screenshot that they will say is from this video, right? It's literally a screenshot of like some Brazilian women. I think they're in like a laundrette, like a laundromat or something. But then some QAnon people kind of blacked bits out of it, redacted bits. They're like, we had to cover this because that was a dead baby. They put like a red hue on it and it looks kind of sinister. But then when you see the real picture, it's just like two women sat there, like just watching TV, you know? Yeah, I mean, that must be horrible. I mean, I know, you know, she's obviously like very like bulletproof in terms of thick skin. You have to be as a politician, but it must be horrible to think like, Jesus Christ, like people think I do this, you know? And then I'd be like, did you do it, Hillary? No, I wouldn't. Right.
What's your position on wearing faces?
Yeah, yeah, right. But nah, man, it must be strange. Like anyone that's in that kind of universe, I mean, I would hate it. I'm sure they're going to come up with something for me at the end of this. I mean, I've actually asked some of them. I've like, I want you on. I don't believe in deplatforming. I'm not really about that. And I've said to some of the more rational ones, like, come on to the podcast and make your case for why it's real. And we'll have an actual discussion. I'm not going to laugh at you. I'm not going to tell you you're an idiot. We'll just say, like, you say what you think. And then I can say why I think that's outrageous. And that's it. We'll have a civil conversation. None of them, not one of them has agreed or even replied. And I know they've seen it because I know these are the people that I've already conversed with before. None of them want to do that. Maybe they think that it's a trap. I don't know. You know, I can't really say, but I think it's important to do that. And, you know, it's a good point you say about Hillary. Like, it affects people in different ways, you know. Like, I mean, her kids must know about it. They must be online all the time, you know. Like, everybody's kids are. Must be weird. Must be weird. I'll ask her. We'll see. Hillary, if you hear this, don't worry about the lizard eyes. Like, let's go.
So the artwork is negotiable. So one question that we know everybody is asking that you may not be able to answer, Jake, yet. It's something we have to bring up. Out of all the theories, the big badger in the room here is, are there any compelling leads on the identity or identities of the so-called Q? And by like compelling, we're talking about the gamut of things, right? Like, Matt, you have a suspect, right?
It sounds super silly in my head right now, but I have seen a lot of people online questioning whether or not Q actually is Donald Trump the president. Is that ridiculous and why?
He's online a lot.
I mean, he's on Twitter a lot. Maybe he's on 4chan a lot as well. So actually, what's even more fun is, so QAnons believe Q plus is Trump. So there's okay. Q and there's Q plus, which is like the extended team, right? And they believe Q plus is Trump because Trump, you know, he does this thing where he points people out in the crowd when he's wandering around and that. And he must have done like, just pointed at someone basically. And they're like, look, he's doing a Q plus. I mean, to be honest, actually, he does do like a weird thing, but he's just going like that guy there. You know what I mean? As anybody does. But no, I would love if it, you know, like, I know it sounds bad, but I would love if QAnon was real and if we were all wrong, it would just be the funniest end to 2020, right? It would just be incredible.
You really think that dude is capable of this much subtext? Like, he's a pretty surfacey guy, you know, whatever you think about his politics, like, he's kind of what you see is what you get. That is the impression that
it would just be great though,
it
right?
Like, we were all fooled. He Andy Kaufman'd us all, you know, like,
laughing my head off as the stormtroopers kick off my door and send me to prison for like believing in equality. Yeah, yeah. You know what I mean? But no, I mean,
speaking of Jake, I don't want to alarm you, but your your door that is directly behind
my
you.
My dog just open in, up yeah.
mysteriously.
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, my dog walked in.
I wasn't going to say anything.
yeah. Hillary, is that you? But like, nah, man, it's... I mean, nah, there's nothing, but obviously there's nothing. But like, it's one of these ones where like, sometimes I do actually try and put my head into the mind of the QAnon person. And I look back to when I was like 13 and I was like, 9/11 is an inside job. And like, I loved all that. And was like, I was like the conspiracy guy before anyone was. I was trying to tell my friends and they were like, what? Shut up, Jake. Like, go away. Like, you're crazy. I mean, I probably had like a year of that before I kind of started reading real books and was like, oh, what? But, you know, I try and put myself into like my younger self and think like, oh, well, and I can see the coincidences, which are so unbelievably small. But when they're wrapped up in it, they need anything to make this real. So if you just give them a crumb, it's like they'll take that. That's a whole cake for them, you know. So there are very few and far between. You know, like I think one was like a typo Trump did and they were like, ha, drop 1-2 whatever. Q also used a semicolon there. We know it's him, you know. So there is that.
Covfefe, no. Baby. That's what right.
Oh God, that was so insufferable. But no, there's no to answer your question, I don't think it's Trump, no.
Okay. Well, we'll look forward to what we'll only be able to describe as classic 2020 if it does end up being the current president. At this point, we do want to say, as we pointed out, that this show is ongoing. Q clearance is ongoing. There are things that, Jake, you cannot reveal to us yet, right, as we're in media res here. But for everyone who is waiting to hear the conclusion of this podcast, we don't want to let the opportunity pass without asking just a couple more questions about Popular Front. So this is independent. This is something now it's across multiple platforms. It started 2018 as originally as a podcast, and you've interviewed some fascinating people. Also recently, like you talked about Ivan the Troll regarding 3D printed firearms. You talked about something we explore pretty often, the world of drone warfare. I think that's one of the most recent episodes.
It is, yeah.
With all this in mind, what – God, this is so depressing. But what trends do you see for conflict in the future? What do you wish more audiences, maybe in the bubble of the West, understood about what's happening out there?
Yeah, it is. Well, it's not depressing. It is depressing, but I think it's less depressing to be aware of it, right? It's better to be like, let's be aware of it rather than bury our heads. So I think the trends, unfortunately, going forward, I see fascism making like quite a large leap. And I don't mean anything I don't like is fascism. I mean like real, actual like fascism within governments, fascism within like militant groups, you know, getting powerful like that, fascist militant groups. And that is a real worry, man. Like in Europe as well, we're seeing a lot of that. I think this whole like, I don't know, populism is probably not the right word, but I'll use that. The whole like right-wing populism is kind of, I think that's here to stay for at least the next 5 years, perhaps. I'm talking about where I am in Europe. So that's us. But then in terms of like the wars and the conflicts going on, it's just like, it's at the brink now where I think a lot is going to start happening. And I don't want to tie it to Trump or anything like that, but I do think there's been a shift and a lot of authoritarian governments can kind of be like, we can get away with more now. Now, I'm not arguing that like, oh yeah, let's have more American intervention. Certainly not. I mean, that's why Iraq is the way it is, right? And many other places. But there is a thing of like, people are, there's always going to be someone bully the rest of the world, right? And I just think the bullies are changing now. I think, you know, China, which, you know, it's an absolute fact that they're like a techno dictatorship, you know, like look at the Uyghurs being put into concentration camps. It's horrific just for being a Muslim, you know? So that the kind of indifference from the world to that was a real eye opener for me. I was like, wow, what happened to never again? You know what I mean? There's like evidence, there's proof. And it's just like, everyone's just like, it just happens. But then it's like, well, what do you want to do? What are we going to do? Invade China? Like, no, like, I don't know what the answer is, man. but I just see it looking bad. You know, I think this thing with Armenia and Azerbaijan is really a problem. And I think it's one of these wars where, in my opinion, it shows that organizations like the UN and NATO and the EU, they're not moral organizations. They might act like they are, but they don't have a moral soul. They're just an organization, you know. And I think when you see these conflicts, it shows that now, when it's not as saucy or as spicy as Syria, when you look at a place like Armenia and Azerbaijan, it's just horrific war going on there. And there's already been war crimes, beheadings. A maternity hospital was targeted today in Armenia. And it's like the world is kind of like aloof to it. And the UN is kind of like, we're deeply concerned again, you know. There's things they can do, you know. Like one of their NATO, you know, Turkey is supplying, in some cases, jihadist militants to Azerbaijan to fight for, you know, for Azerbaijan. And it's like when NATO just goes like, you know, like, what can you do then? You know, like one of the most powerful organizations, where is there to go? So, I mean, I know I sound a bit nihilistic in it, but I think what is actually happening is a, perhaps like a recalibration of where the powers are and where people's perceptions of what those powers do. You know, like a genocide can happen now, and the idea that the West is going to step in is kind of laughable, I think. You know, it's not going to happen. And I'm not saying... This is going to sound callous. I'm not saying the West should step in, because I'm not like pro-intervention, but some things are just right and wrong. You know, like if you have the power to stop people being put into concentration camps, something should be done. You know what I mean? Like if NATO forces are committing war crimes on camera, the least NATO can do is say, we've seen that and it's bad. I mean, there are instances, trust me, man, when I was in Southeast Turkey where there were war crimes happening, NATO's second largest army was committing them, in some cases filming them and recording them themselves and putting them out there and going, look what we did. And just no one said anything, you know, and it's kind of like, where do you go from there? I don't know, honestly, man. I guess my answer is I don't have the full answer. And it sounds grim and it sounds miserable, but one thing I will say that's good is always remember the people living there, man, are mostly not bad people. Like the resilience you will see specifically in the Middle East, like I've seen under war conditions, I'm like, how are you living like this? How are you having a laugh? How are you functioning so well? So I think the one thing we can take from it is like people will just keep living. You know what I mean? Even when they're getting killed, they will keep living. And that's the only kind of solace I take from it. It's like the people won't be crushed no matter what, I think. You know what I mean? And by the people, I don't mean any political whatever. I just mean, you know, just people, your average people that are caught up in this, they won't be crushed fully ever. So that's the only good thing. But I don't know what else to tell you, man. Like, it's pretty grim. And unfortunately, like, you know, there's a lot of work for me to look through and things to do with Popular Front, because, you know, we do cover all of these bases. If there's a clash, if there's a conflict happening, we will look into it. And honestly, in the last year, I've just been like, Christ, I don't even know what to talk about now. Like, it's just, I've got like a list on my wall and it's just adding up every day. So yeah, it's grim. It's grim.
Well, what I would say is anytime you want to just come on this show and talk about any one specific place or a specific thing, we would be more than happy to have you and, you know, do some research with you on something.
I'd love that, man. Like, definitely appreciate that. Like, I would definitely take you up on that. There's so many. Do you know what's interesting? You guys can maybe look at, like, conspiracies in the Middle East. I have so many friends in the Middle East because of my work. Everyone loves a conspiracy, even down to like there's a conspiracy with the cafe. You know what I mean? He's like, the Israelis are sending him that hummus or whatever. You know what I mean? There's always a conspiracy. Right. It's good fun, actually.
We did a piece on the genre of animals as spies, which is a wildly popular genre of its own in the Middle East.
I heard that one. Like the there's also like the sharks and stuff with lasers and stuff as well, yes, right? Like, yeah,
exactly. And then, you know, what can you say to that? Because intelligence agencies in the past did have that bright idea where someone's like, I don't know, man, what can we put in a cat?
Yeah, things like that. Though I always, you know, like there's a great book John Ronson did, The Men Who Stare at Goats, and like I try and explain to people that's not like a whole huge conspiracy. It's one guy with a dumb idea who didn't have enough oversight, and someone went, yeah, let Jack do that, whatever, get him out of my hair. And before you know it, he's got like a spying, looking through walls, killing goats thing going on. And like often the biggest conspiracies that, oh, they're real. Often it's like, it wasn't that insidious. It was just some idiot who like bypassed his middle manager somehow, you know, and he had like a budget. And they're the most fun ones. Yeah. So I don't know. It's there's a lot of them out there. Like, not all conspiracies are as like dark as QAnon, but they're the ones I enjoy. That, like, that's why I love cryptids. You know, Mothman's never going to hurt me, man.
Well, I don't know.
Have you seen that statue of him, though? In West Virginia? He looks like a He-Man action figure. He's got crazy sculpted abs and like buns of steel, literally.
He's in great shape.
It's nuts. Yeah.
I'll say it. The Mothman statue is thick with two C's. I mean, it's like...
Yeah.
Those cheeks are clapping. Yeah.
Good for him, man.
Before we continue objectifying Mothman, shout out to cryptids. And Jake, thank you so much for being so generous with your time today. As we said, like, Popular Front, if you're ever interested in the geopolitical topics we've covered on this show in the past, then do please check out Popular Front. It's a long-running show. I can't say enough good about it personally, and it's worth your time checking out, especially as you are waiting for the conclusion of Q clearance and listening along to that. In the meantime, Jake, where can people learn more about your work in general?
Yeah, man. Thanks very much, by the way. I'm glad you guys listen. I'm like a fanboy for this podcast, man. So it's so cool that you guys are like, oh, I listen to Popular Front. So it's great for me. But if people check out, you can go on the website. It's popularfront.co. Like, I joke that it's counteroffensive, but no one would sell me the .com. But or you can check me on Twitter. I'm always on there like moaning about stuff. That's like @Jake_Hanrahan, HANRIHAN. And yeah, man, just give me a shout there. I like to talk to cool people.
I would just recommend youtube.com/popularfront. That's where I would go. If you're listening to this and you were a fan of Vice News early on when that stuff was happening, go check out this YouTube site and you will see similar videos, but done outside of that organization by Jake and people who are working with Jake. It's fantastic stuff.
I always forget to plug the YouTube. I don't know why. Like, yeah, we do podcasts. We do, you know, documentaries. We do articles. We had a magazine out. Yeah, yeah. So definitely youtube.com/popularfront. We've got loads of documentaries, all filming on the ground, you know, shoulder to shoulder with whoever's fighting or clashing or whatever. So definitely check that out.
And don't forget the podcast. Well, tell us a little bit more just about where to find that, Jake.
Oh, Q clearance.
Yes, sir.
Sorry. Yeah, yeah. I should have mentioned that one. iHeart. If you just search Q clearance on any podcast app, you'll find it. It will be the top one. It's got like this cool green pyramid with an eye like art for it. Yeah, man. Just check that out. Q clearance. It's all on all of the apps is there.
What a wild ride. We hope that you have enjoyed today's conversation, and we want to hear what you have to say about the many topics we discussed with Jake in today's interview. You can find us online. We are on Facebook. We're on Instagram. We're on the other one, Twitter. We're on that one, too. We like to recommend our Facebook page, Here's Where It Gets Crazy, where you can meet the best part of this show, your fellow listeners.
Yes, we also want to mention that you can call us if you wish. Our number is 1-833-STDWYTK. As soon as you hear Ben talking and all the stuff going on that you usually would hear with stuff they don't want you to know, you're going to know you're in the right place. Leave a message. Let us know if we can use your name, your likeness, and everything on our show, because we use those voicemails for the listener mail segments. Just please let us know in that call if we can do that.
And if you would rather get in touch with us, you know, more of an old-fashioned-y kind of way, you can do that as well by sending us an email. We are
conspiracy@iHeartRadio.com.
Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.